Good evening. It's amazing how much you add to my personal practice. So nice to sit with you. Thank you so much for that. And so, what are we talking about? What are we trying to learn about ourselves? Well, we're working on the four foundations of mindfulness, with the first one being mindfulness of the body. And then we're going a little deeper, quite a bit deeper, actually, to understanding the embodiment of life. And truly, it's where we experience life completely, as it is, with no additives, organic, you could say. So it's like experience the world through the sensations of the body. It's feeling life instead of thinking life. And that takes practice. That's what we're doing. Embodiment is a state in which our entire intelligence is experienced through the whole body experience, which really makes it reliable. And so we make a distinction between the mind and the body because that's the way science tells us we learn the best, is breaking it down into parts and then bringing it back together. But really, the mind-body, there's no distinctions there. Or to anything. But nothing can open us to the truth of more than the whole body awareness. So let's just go there. Let's don't hesitate. And we're listening to our experiences to distinguish the truth, which is, can it be experienced? It's there anyway. The truth is always there. But it's up to us to touch it. So, learning to distinguish what's true, because remember, the truth sets us free. It's the law of nature. We let life flow, as Randy reminded us in the guided meditation, is a total relaxation. I've heard teachers say, first thing that we should say to ourselves is relax. Relax. And somehow when I hear those words, and I feel the effect of that word, I'm experiencing that directly. Such a phenomena, Nita, such a phenomena. But paying attention to the sensations in the body, it's a felt sense of living. And if we're not in our body, whole body, then where are we? Well, we're walking and talking heads. I say we because the first time the teacher said go to the body, I went to the head. Why? Because I was just paying attention to the head. So it was really just the walking, talking head. and just lost in whatever comes up from the mind. So we're beginning to learn the difference between thinking about life and experiencing life directly. And as I understand, the truth does not come to us but through the experiences of the body. And so it's most important. And we've been conditioned to think about everything and to have a dialogue even with ourselves about everything. It's just like being with nature is not enough. We want to add our 2 cents worth. And it's not necessary. In fact, it causes suffering. And we know life is difficult. It can be so baffling. And we've taken advantage or for granted that we have a body and we have, and I'm talking about myself, no idea about the truth of the body because it hasn't been studied or it hasn't been brought to my conditioning. So it is the body, this is just me saying this, it's the riddle of the universe. It's so difficult to be human, and I know I don't have to convince you of that. But the Buddha takes the teachings of the body to another level. It's a softer level. First few seconds when we wake up, often we're in a kind of dreamy state. But that is our first level of body experience. Oh, wake up. Bodily sensations.
From
sleeping. Say that again, Randy.
Is it waking up from sleeping?
Waking up from sleeping. And then we drink our coffee and we wake up and guess what we bring into that? Those experiences. Well, our baggage. It comes up almost immediately. And we know them. It's those that we've carried and haven't loosened in any way because we didn't know how. So what we carry around is something we're studying. It's important. For example, by worrying about something or, okay, now another day of self-criticism. Let's go. You know, what can I find? Where can I find my faults today? I can get pretty creative. And nothing's wrong with thinking if we know its true nature, because then it is not any more important than anything else. But often we use the mind against ourselves. And our everyday notion of the body, we might say, this is my hand. But there's no sensation called hand. What we feel are certain sensations, like pressure, heaviness, and lightness. And then we create in our minds a concept, hand. And in meditation, we move from the concept of body to the awareness of the body. And as we find out quickly, it's a changing energy field of elements constantly changing. I mean, why is it so difficult? Because nothing stays around for long, and it's so daggum confusing at times. And we become victims of our own conditioning. And last week we discussed how to perceive our bodies. And most importantly, what we call the body and what seems so attractive and delightful from one perspective is an illusion. And our whole lives, once we start waking up to it, is just one illusion after another. And you say, well, I can live happily ever after. Well, can you? Can you? So, does the truth actually set us free? Any truth, the little ones, the big ones. And all that's going on is really just a collection of interrelated parts. None of them, which is particularly beautiful, except when we project what we think is beauty relative to our conditioning. Remember the photos from last week? You know, how we set up, you know, when we say we, the culture, set up expectations for us all that it's not reachable. And so it's no wonder we think something's wrong with us. But this contemplation, the benefits of this is it diminishes the power of that conditioning, strong conditioning in the mind. And again, that has to be experienced, or it's just words, concepts. But we are getting to know the truth. We start with ourselves. How we view ourselves. What we should look like. But we also see the impermanent nature of all these anatomical parts. We don't give it much thought. But as we grow older, I can testify that these parts are getting much more attention than they did when everything was so easy. I asked Randy the other day, I said, Randy, are you finding that everything seems to be harder? Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, he agreed. It is. It's like the body is not reacting and experiencing. It cannot do what it used to could do, but we have memory. Well, I can remember when things are changing constantly. Now we have the choice of being in denial, or illusion, or ignorance, or we can become brave and look for the truth of the phenomena of life. And we take it, these bodies, as self. So we identify with it and we think that's who we are. But actually, it's an interdependent system of organs, bones, blood, neural pathways. I won't go into the uglies that I said last week or week before last. But we skip over that. Because why? Well, we don't think it's valuable. But you know what? The Buddha says, yeah, it is very valuable. It has the potential to shift us into how we live with ourselves. And so, we're nature. We're organic. The truth is, in all of us, in everything, there's only earth, water, fire, and air constantly moving and changing. Now, why is that so important? Well, it's the truth. And so, you know, what we do with our lives depends upon the truth. The earth, the water, the fire, the air. I can remember doing a little activity with Ram Dass. They're in Austin or near Austin, in Austin Center. And Ram Dass built a big fire, and then we all got to have something to throw into the fire as we chanted the earth, the water, the fire, the air returns, returns, returns. So why can't we see that? Well, we can't see it because we haven't been taught what to look for or what's important to know about living. So the Buddha says contemplating the way of connecting with the elements, which is what we are, along with every other thing, the earth, the water, the fire, the air, then we become less attached to our conditioned thoughts about who we are and what we should do with our lives. And we begin to see the truth that these parts wear out. Damn it, they do. And with just a little bit of wisdom, it makes it easier. So we don't take it when we begin to see quite experientially how everything is changing constantly. We don't take it to be some failure of self when we get sick or when suffering arises. Or we don't think, oh, it's the defeat of the body. I used to think when I got sick, I did something wrong. We understand it to be simply be the nature of all conditioned things. And so the first time I heard it, no, it's probably wasn't the first time, but the first time it made a huge mark on me was in a class that taught me the law of conservation of energy. Now listen closely, you already know it. Matter, energy, cannot be created or destroyed. Are we matter? Yeah. Is everything matter? It can only be transformed. Now, take that scientific theory to your body. So, we're changing. Drop the body. Transformation. What happens after that? I don't know. The Buddha doesn't tell us. So we drop the body or die, and guess what happens to us? You got it. We go back to the earth, the water, the fire, the air. Even today, I'm running out of time, we have a contemporary concern for some of us who are waking up. What happens? What do we leave to the earth when we leave it? Well, we're conditioned to think. We call the mortician. Come get this body. Let the system that has been set up for us do it for us. But we're beginning to wake up to there are more conscious options. Randy and I went to the Wimberley Death Cafe a couple years ago that was taught by one of our Sangha members, Sandy. And she was quite learned and all of our options. So we created an option to make sure that our body didn't pollute the earth as we go to it. Because embalming does. The traditional way is not the green way. And so we went to the School of Forensic Anthropology Center at Texas State, and we said, what can you do with these bodies when they're useless, when they die? They said, oh, you can be a great source of information. That helps everyone. Because I don't know exactly what happens, but it's more or less just throwing the body out in nature and letting nature take care of it. I had one friend who said, oh my gosh, I could never do that. And she said, but really the only main reason I can is I just can't stand to think about my grandchildren passing by and saying, grandma's out there. Grandma's out there in the field. Going back to what? The earth, the water, the fire, the air. So we've added awareness of the skin, flesh, and bone to the technique of scanning, which is conducive to breaking these concepts about our bodies. Now we can turn to the elements as the teachings lead us to the earth, the water, the fire, the air. And so the earth element refers to the common experience of solidity, the qualities of stiffness, hardness, or softness. The water element refers to the qualities of cohesion and fluidness. Analio says, imagine dry flour, you know, baking powder on its own. Its particles do not hold together, but when we add water, the particles all adhere to one another, creating dough. And according to the teachings, the water element is not perceived separately but from the other elements, but it's what holds them all together. So the fire elements refers to temperature, heat, and cold. It's also the feeling of the lightness in the body. It's how something is warmed. Or the teachings say it is that which things age. Fire is excessive heat that burns things up. And so the air element causes movement in the body, the feeling of expanding, moving, the feeling of pressure. In meditation, when we're being mindful of the rise and fall of the abdomen, we're really being mindful of the air element. In different ways, each one leading to us to direct insight into the three characteristics that we hold in our hearts constantly. The three characteristics, anicca, anatta, dukkha. Impermanence. This is not who we are. And suffering is part of life. That has to be known and experienced. We'll do it anyway. But which in turn leads to freeing the mind from clinging. Now why? What does clinging, why is clinging so something? We remember what the Buddha says. It's trying to hold on to things that are fleeting. So if we try to hold on to the body as it's been in the past, it causes suffering. In the wisdom of the impermanence does set us free. Not immediately, but somehow the wisdom begins, well, we begin to hold it in our bodies. We begin to feel it, the wisdom. And so I'm way over, and I'm going to stop there. And so next week, how to contemplate these four elements into our practice. And so next week we'll talk about ways to add to your practice that will help in this area. Thank you.